Now it's time for A.O. Chapman! Wait a second, wait a second, wait a second. That is not the theme for A.O. Chapman. That is not the theme for A.O. Chapman.
Right,
that is not the theme for A.O. Chapman. I'm sorry.
Put on
that
right. All the time in the world.
Hurry up, A.O. Chapman. This is your theme. Sorry, A.O. Oh, this is your theme. This is your...
All the time in the
this
world.
This is your theme. That's not your theme. That's not your... Okay, this... And you're still listening to CITR Radio, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, and the Nardwuar Human Serviette Radio Show. And who is in the studio right now? Who are you?
I am Aaron Chapman, better known to some, and well, at least yourself from my old CITR days, as A.O. Chapman.
A.O. Chapman, I'm sorry, I played the wrong intro theme.
Oh, that's okay.
After all these years, and what? What did we hear, and which songs did I play, and why did I play them, and who are you?
That was a record by a band called the Nipple Erectors, featuring a very, very young Mr. Shane McGowan, who everybody knows from the Pogues. But that was his first band, called Nipper Rectors, and the theme song, every time I come on here, you always want me to play All the Time in the World, which is a song we just heard, but before that, we accidentally put on King of the Bop.
So you've been here so many times.
That I've got my own theme song now, yeah.
At least for 14 years, we know for that you've been coming to the Nardwater Human Serviette Radio Show for 14 years. We'll get into that in a moment, but we know you've been at least for 14, probably even 15 years.
Let's
maybe even longer than that, but we know at least guaranteed for 14 years. So I've heard your theme song that many times, and I got it wrong. I'm terribly sorry.
That's all right.
I'm kind of shook up about what we're going to actually describe a bit later on the Nardwater Human Serviette Radio Show. But right now, who are you? A.O. Chapman, who are you? What are your A.O. Chapman, your traits? You have the best voice in radio.
You said that before.
For 14 years. Has that got you anywhere?
Yes, it did. Because
has it got you anywhere?
You know what? You said that, and then David Wisdom over at the CBC heard that, and then he said, that guy should be on. And then I actually ended up getting work at the CBC for a little bit, doing some freelance stuff because of you.
And then, A.O. Chapman, you ventured into the Real Mackenzies.
Yes.
You took that pogueying rock to the Real Mackenzies. You were a charter member of the Real Mackenzies.
I was,
and your songs still appear on Real Mackenzies records, don't they?
Yeah, they do. Yeah, no, it's good. It was a fun band to be in. It was a fun way to grow up because I was about 21 when that band started.
And that moves on to our next thing. Yeah. A.O. Chapman, get in the bed. You grew up with that band.
Yes.
And Henry Rollins, again, dating our relationship, A.O. Chapman, he had Get in the Van, and we were like, what, Get in the Van? What about Get in the Bed? We want the dirt. We want the filth. And you pioneered that, didn't you, A.O. Chapman?
Well, I did, because I had read, I think I came on your show once, and I read some of my tour diaries from the Real Mackenzies days. And you said, you got to put this into a book. I mean, this would make Get in the Van look like a Boy Scout trip. Which is true, and I hope to do it one day. It'd be a funny story, that's for sure.
Get in the Bed, A.O. Chapman, and in A.O. Chapman, you told me about Hugh Dillon, your connection to Hugh Dillon.
Yes, a distant relative. Yes,
I just thought I'd throw it in there because I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, sure.
A.O. Lick the Pole. You
introduced
me to the important band Lick the Pole from Vancouver, British Columbia.
Lick the Pole.
Again, we're going over stuff from the past. Maybe people don't care now. Well, they should care. What can you say about Lick the Pole and your introduction?
Lick the Pole was a band in the mid '90s featuring these three girls. And Jules LaFabula, and God, what was the other girl? I can't remember her name now. But anyway, it was mostly the two of them, and there was a third in the beginning. But the band featured some of the people that ended up, well, actually playing in the Matthew Good Band and DSK and Real Mackenzies and also and Sex with Nixon and bands like this. And it was kind of a joke band that suddenly took off, and then it made it from basically this joke that happened one night at the Town Pump way back when to being on the Fromage thing on Much Music way back, and that was sort of the high water mark.
A.O. Chapman, Red Hot Video. You worked
I
at
did.
Red Hot Video.
I
you
did.
Still work at Red Hot Video.
No, I don't.
And you are here to name names.
I did. I worked at Red Hot Video when the Mackenzies sort of folded. I had a bit of money saved up, and then I pissed that away pretty quick. And I thought, geez, I got to get a job. And I thought, well, what? I can't really put on a resume that I've been wearing a kilt and screaming at people for the last 6 years. So I sort of put feelers out to find any job I could. And a guy phoned me up. A friend said, "Hey, I'm going on holiday for 3 months. Take my job while I'm gone." I said, "Perfect." And I forgot what he had done. I thought I was thinking of something else. And as it turns out, he worked at Red Hot Video. And I saw some things happen. This company is no longer there. I believe it's like a Tom's Video or something like that.
And your pins express are those of A.O. Chapman. And I saw
some shocking things and strange things that would come in there. And one day I'll make a movie of it. Not an X-rated movie.
You're ready to name names.
I'm ready to name names.
Filth.
I love that, too,
because remember I've interviewed bands at a Dark Ride Human
Serviette
Radio Show. And you're like, what sort of interview was that? That's not filth.
Yeah.
There's no names named.
There were people at Red Hot Video. There were people from a lot of local television series that would come in. People from The X-Files. Beastie Lions that would come in.
And I'm glad they did come in.
Yeah.
They're human,
sure,
right?
Sure, there's nothing wrong with that.
A.O. Video.
Go ahead, enjoy yourself.
Yeah. A.O. Video.
That's what they should have called it.
A.O. Video. A.O. Chapman, also you progressed into the band The Town Pants.
That's right.
That's where you are today, in The Town Pants.
That's right.
Playing Bowen Island this weekend.
We're playing Bowen Island tomorrow night, yeah.
And you've done many tours. You've jammed with Iron Maiden,
A.O. Right.
Chapman.
That's right, in Sweden.
Which is pretty amazing. That was Steve Harris? Was it Steve Harris? Was it in a pub? Or
Well, Iron Maiden are still huge there, and we were playing.
They're huge everywhere.
They're huge everywhere, really, still, yeah. But people, they sometimes think. Anyway, they were in Sweden, and when we were in Stockholm, and we were playing really just this pub show, and they happened to come in. They were playing the next night, and they were just coming in for a drink, and there were all these Swedish people kind of freaking out doing, coming up to, you know who's here? So we went into a banjo and mandolin and, acoustic guitar sort of version of Number of the Beast or something like that, and they thought it was hilarious and came up, and Yannick Gers, I think is how his name is pronounced, came up and played with us.
The blonde-haired guy.
Blonde-haired guy.
Are they all blonde?
They all wear Iron Maiden shirts. They all look like they're fans. You can't tell them apart.
I'm glad they were wearing Iron Maiden shirts, just to tell the audience
yes,
it really was
who
Iron
it was,
Maiden.
Yeah.
Because and I didn't otherwise see, they may not have known.
But I didn't see Bruce Dickinson. He was there, but apparently he was like really drunk. And I looked around because I thought he's the one guy maybe I'd recognize.
Hey, Chapman, you've been on the road many, many, many years.
Yes.
I love the way one of the early road stories from the Real McKenzies was put basically into legend by you, A.O. Chapman. The what? Shit in a cistern cup of soup. Could you quickly go over this story? Because this is a legendary road story. Again, when you interview a band, you always ask them for road stories.
And they never tell you nothing.
That is nothing. You have the road story to end all road stories. Maybe just a quick little punchline version.
Grant from the Smugglers, he names names too, but he's got his little tour diary that he did back then. Anyway, that was in Eugene, Oregon, when we had played there, or was it in Portland? Anyway, it was definitely in Oregon, and these people came back and said, "Hey, you can by all means stay at our place." And it was this there was a couple of these older ladies that we sort of hit their place and ate all their food. It was like a Scottish bug infestation.
This is the Real McKenzie.
This is the Real McKenzie. And then I was pretty beat, so I kind of wanted to sleep. And I woke up to find this girl sort of taking my pants off. And normally that would have been a completely acceptable, form of behavior. But she was this sort of craggy-faced, terrible, sort of hideous crone. And I thought, hey, man, this is not, I said, I felt like I was being, attacked or used. So this kind of got under my skin. So in the morning when everybody was having a shower, I went in and I was kind of upset at, still being, used like this. So I found a bunch of Nair hair remover and I squirted that all in the shampoo and put the cap back on, left that there for the next when the girl came in. So I'm sure she came in afterwards after a shower and ended up looking like Telly Savalas. But I also took the lid of the toilet tank off. And instead of having my business in the bowl, I went in the tank. And it'd be, I can only imagine what, you can kind of imagine from there.
Because
I
don't people don't often look in the cistern.
People don't
do
look
they?
There. And as soon as it flushes, of course, the water from the tank goes into the,
And they wonder where the smell's coming from.
Exactly, yeah.
But to top it all off.
This was the kind of stuff we pulled in the McKenzies all the time. And it earned us a terrible reputation. But only to the people that had wronged us. We were nice to people who were really nice to us. Or weren't looking for
the
something.
The cup of soup, though. And you took a cup of soup.
Oh, yeah. And that's it. And also,
this is the punchline.
Yeah,
Neo.
And then the last thing, because we were always trying to be pretty creative when we were causing havoc. And then I took the, it was a water pick shower head. So I got I ran out to the car and I got some tools, a screwdriver, and I opened up that. And I poured some beef Bovril cup of soup into the shower head. And poured it into the very, and sort of stuffed it down there, and then closed it up again when I was done. And then, of course, then the gag is when you turn the shower on, it's just going to be this soupy brown thing, and it'll be there for a while. It won't, that doesn't come out, it doesn't flush itself out quickly. Little tip.
As I've asked you for the past 14 years, what happened from that?
I never thought, I told everybody about what I had done as soon as we drove away. And we were all laughing down the I-5 at this. And I never thought anything of it. I never thought anything again until maybe about 10 years later when I was walking down Seymour and Dunsmuir and I saw that woman. I saw that woman again and it hit me like a ton of bricks. I couldn't believe it. She had all her hair back and stuff, but I thought, does she live here now? Has she come to get me? And I've never seen her since. My jaw fell.
Did you run away?
No, I sort of said, oh, hey, and I just kept walking, And I was so surprised to see her. It was like a ghost from the past. So
she didn't confront you on anything?
She didn't. I don't know. I mean,
and you are again who?
Iron Chapman.
You are?
A.O. Chapman. I call myself A.O. Chapman because I used to write for Discorder, and I would write my articles under A.O. Chapman.
And you were the promotions director.
I was a promotions director at the time.
You're Vancouver's hired gun, aren't you? You've done a lot of gigs. You're Vancouver's hired gun.
I guess so.
And A.O., you also introduced me to William Cooper.
Yes.
And if people have been listening to Nardwater Human Survey Radio Show for the past couple months, I've been playing a few repeats of some classic encore presentations
of
the Nardwater Human Survey Radio Show. One of them brought to you by you, A.O. Chapman.
Yes.
William Cooper, an interview with William Cooper.
William Cooper was a UFO, what would you call call him? A UFO...
Ologist.
UFOologist, yeah.
Former intelligence officer.
A former intelligence officer who had written a thing called Behold the Pale Horse. And back in the early 90s, William Cooper was really one of the big names that people were talking about.
And you broke him in this town.
And I broke
because
him.
Because before the internet, people would hand out, like, Xerox pieces of paper,
that's
form letters, weird thing.
Yeah.
And you brought it into
this
CITR one day. I couldn't believe it.
And you have to understand, this is pre-internet. It's pre-96. You know, like when that was, and that was a huge, thing. And Cooper ended up getting involved in some kind of firefight with.
He ended up dying. He was shot by a sheriff.
He was shot
by federal
marshals or something.
Very tragic. But you helped break William Cooper in this town. Thank you, A.O. Chapman. Also, A.O. Chapman, you have a brand new story out right now about the Carisdale Arena.
Yes.
We also ventured into the milkshake murders too.
Yeah, on another episode.
I think it'll be the subject of a great song. I think sometime actually you did a spoken word performance of the milkshake murders.
Yeah.
Which I think was something to do with the BOMAC sign, wasn't it?
It was, yes.
Just quickly, milkshake murders.
Milkshake murders, it was a headline that the province gave that story at the time. In 1965, a CKNW radio DJ by the name of Rene Castellani got up on top of the BOMAC auto dealership sign, which was Jimmy Pattison's place of business at the time, and he was up there, he was going to stay up there and broadcast in there, not come down until all the cars were sold in the lot. It was like a little promotion thing that the station had with the auto dealership. But at night, he was sneaking down and poisoning his wife and using the fact that he was up on the sign as an alibi. And it sounds like a murder mystery or sounds like something out of a film noir, but it's all true, and it happened in Vancouver.
And you document it. So right now, you're back, A.O. Chapman.
Back,
with
baby.
The Vancouver Courier. Yeah, cover story on the Carisdale Arena.
Yes.
This is an amazing article. Where'd you get the idea for doing something like this? Actually, you've delved into history before, but what made you go to Carisdale Arena?
I grew up near the Carisdale Arena, about 4 or 5 blocks away from it. I grew up out there, out in the west side, out in Carisdale. And I remember as a
kid...
Where
you used to throw porno mags into kids' tree houses to get them in trouble.
That old Discorder story, that's right, that I found on the street, yeah. And coincidentally enough, before I met Joe Sather from Sex with Nixon, who ended up being being my roommate for a while, he first read that. That was his first introduction to me before he had ever... Anyway, it's in the Wednesday, June 7th of 2006 edition of the Vancouver Courier, so it's actually a week past. But I was supposed to be on your show last week, but that's so...
You're playing a gig in Surrey, though.
I was out in the sticks then. But if you go online on vancourier.com, you can read it and go to the back issues thing and click on the June 7th.
It's a great profile of all the gigs that happened at the Carisdale Arena.
Yeah, the Carisdale Arena in the early 80s.
And a lot of those gigs are put on by CITR. Like, CITR presents the jam. CITR presents the Clash. What do you say about some of those gigs there? It's an amazing assortment. The Clash, the Jam,
Peter Tosh, Jimmy Cliff, the Split Enz. All these bands played at the little Carisdale Arena out in the middle of...
Now, when did the gigs stop at Carisdale Arena? Because I thought they stopped in 82, but the music director of CITR, his girlfriend said she saw EMF there. That's true?
EMF, that's true. In 1989, that was one thing I didn't manage to include in the article, but that was seemed to be just a one-off, and I don't know whether the neighbors complained again when EMF played there. And in fact, as I gather, EMF were not actually playing. They were playing to a backing track because the keyboardist was throwing his keyboard up in the air while you heard the keyboard being played. So I think they were just, by all accounts, they were just miming.
So maybe it wasn't as loud. Now, when did gigs stop at Carisdale Arena?
They stopped in the summer of 1982. That was after... In June of 82, the Jam had played there on the 5th, and the Clash had played there on the 26th. But on May 28th, a month before, Motorhead had played there. And that show caused so much disruption when that show happened, from the noise and about a huge biker crowd that came out to see Motorhead and then just lingered around in the neighborhood, you know, having sex in the hedgerows and the bushes and drinking and vomiting all over Carisdale, that some neighbors complained and took their complaints to city council and banned the shows from happening there ever again. But I remember as a kid, I remember being about 10 or 11 years old and seeing, you know, all these freaks kind of come into Carisdale, which still is now a very kind of a little closed sort of, you know, white, neat, and clean community, that all these freaks would come in, and I didn't know what the heck was going on.
I'm so happy that the last gig really was EMF, because now we can't blame it on Motorhead. That's good. We can't blame it on Motorhead.
Well,
we can blame it on EMF.
Well, the EMF thing was a one-off, and there actually was a Hard Rubber Orchestra thing that happened at the Carisdale Arena as well in the last 5, 6, 7 years.
But going back 50 years, it was the site of the first rock and roll gig ever in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
The first rock and roll gig ever in British Columbia. altogether. When Bill Haley and the Comets played there in 1956, this month, in
1956.
Yeah, 50 years ago
to
this
2006,
month.
Vancouver Courier, cover story.
Cover story, baby.
By A.O. Chapman. Yes. Also, was the Jam's last gig. I didn't realize.
It was the Jam's last show in North America. After that, they went and did a tour of Japan, I believe. Yeah, it was an Asian tour. And then they had about 9 shows of that, and then the band split up after that. So the Vancouver was the site of their last North American show.
Now, are there any movies or recordings from Carisdale Arena? Because all these gigs that happened, find out what gigs happened at Carisdale Arena? How did you find out?
It is very difficult to find any kind of information on that, and it's kind of like lost history because people at the time didn't really think it was that important or that unique. And it certainly is now. I mean, this would be the equivalent of, when you think of the Clash in 1982, that would be like U2 playing at the Carisdale Arena, by contrast.
Some people didn't like the combat rock era Clash. Yeah, were a big fan of combat rock.
Sure.
I like Cut the Crap, too.
You like Cut the Crap, too?
I like Cut the Crap.
Sure,
this is England.
Yeah.
That's a great record. People slag the combat rock era of the Clash, but it's a good performance.
Yeah.
Was that the biggest gig that happened there in your research of Carisdale Arena gigs?
Well, the arena held...
It was 1982, right?
That was 1982. The arena held 4,000 people, so it was sold out. I think the Jam show was just shy of being sold out at 3,600 or 3,800, and the Motorhead show, by contrast, there were only about 1,500 people there, but they made such a fuss, they made such a ruckus in the presence of all those bikers from Wally coming in to see the show, and Motorhead fans disrupting everything. They were, they didn't need to be any more than 1,500.
And you interviewed Joey Shithead about this because he was
working
at the show. What can you say about local bands working at the show? Because I never noticed that the local bands actually worked at the show, opening for the gigs,
sometimes,
but they were employed.
Sometimes
they did open.
The
Scissors, or Pointed Sticks for Devo.
Yeah, the Scissors opened for the Jam.
And actually, just to think, all the many people going to see the Jam, that's quite a success.
Yeah.
You didn't really see the Jam broke up because they didn't have North American success. That's quite a success,
sure.
Isn't it?
Yeah, no, that's a huge thing. Yeah, but there were lots of people, lots of locals working, not only in terms of people like Bev Davies, who took these amazing shots of some of the stuff that's in
the
article.
It is the cover photo, if you want to describe.
Photo.
What is the cover photo?
The cover
of
photo
Courier?
Of that article, which you can also look at online at Vancouver.com if you look up the Wednesday.
VancouverCourier.com.
VancouverCourier.com, yeah. Actually, the website is VanCourier.com. Anyway, but it's a photo of Bev Davies is right at the Carisdale Arena, the marquee saying The Clash, June 26, sold out. And there's a bunch of people looking all in one direction at the bottom. And I recently asked Bev, why is everybody looking at the corner of 41st and West Boulevard there, or East Boulevard? And it's because they're actually looking at the Clash tour van pulling in. And that was the thing. So that's something I didn't mention in the article. So
you did quite a bit of research. Like I said, talking to Joey Shithead. What was about the local bands working the shows? Like Joey Shithead opening doors and stuff like that? What was that about?
Well, they needed people to build the stages or put stages together. And there's a lot of people that were in bands and people that weren't in bands that did that. But some of the guys from DOA and the Subhumans got contracted to help do that work out. And it was good money for them. They, as Joe said, he made more money than doing little punk rock shows and stuff like that. So he was quite. But one thing they did when they would be inside and they would be sort of not necessarily security, but they'd be stagehands and they'd have to be there for the duration, is they had lots of friends outside that weren't necessarily getting in because they didn't have any money to get in, or the shows were sold out, as in the case of the Peter Tosh Jimmy Cliff gig. So Joe would sneak around to the side of the door, and this is a better story told by him probably. But he would open the door and say, "Listen, everybody run in, but don't let the door slam behind you." And he'd take off so he wouldn't get caught. And then there'd always be somebody that slammed the door. And then the security would run around, and everybody would get busted, and some people could stay, and some people would get thrown out, and this and that.
But you talked to Ed.
At one show at the Peter Tosh show, a 19-year-old Rick Arboyd, who is now the president of Network Records, was one of those kids that snuck in, but he never got a good look at who it was until he read the story.
You name names!
Name names! You've
you
got
name
to name
finally.
Names! And now our boy
knows... Who would have thought Network and DOA would go together?
There you go. See, it's the hidden history of Vancouver.
You talked to everybody. Even talked to Shane Lunny.
Shane Lunny, who's
from
a great
Night
guy.
Dreams.
Shane Lunny is a great guy. He's still around today. He's very active in multimedia production, and his company... While he was doing Night Dreams, of course, now, 20 years later, 25 years later, I guess, his company is now made the out at the Torino Winter Olympics, made the Canadian exhibit or the Canadian pavilion for the 2010 games that everybody was raving about. So this guy that used to, be involved in underground media and this and that is now
And he had a show called Night Dreams.
Night Dreams, yeah.
Night Dreams, and it was a video show, and lots of bands were interviewed on it.
This was before Much Music.
Did you get a chance to see any of those?
I vaguely remember
but
Night
you didn't
Dreams.
Because I was able to ask Shane for copies or anything like that.
I don't know if Shane has any copies of Night Dreams. That'd be an interesting question to ask him.
What's coming up next for you, A.O. Chapman? I mean, this Carousel Arena story is really fascinating. Again, we're speaking here to A.O. Chapman.
Thank you, sir.
Carousel Arena. We mentioned any other gigs we haven't mentioned at Carousel Arena, like Bill Haley. Bill Haley in the
Bill
comments.
Haley was there.
Why was
Smokey Robinson played? The Young Rascals played. A band called Mother Tucker's Yellow Duck played, which I think morphed into BTO at one point, or eventually, I should say. And, a lot of people played there.
You know,
Collectors, Painted Ship.
The bend of the article kind of is, oh, isn't it too bad it's gone, the Carousel Arena's gone?
Yes.
I mean, i.e., they're not doing gigs there anymore. But really, was it that great a place to see a gig?
Well, that's the thing. I guess it's looking through the looking glass now or whatever, because it had notoriously bad acoustics. It was it's a hockey arena. It's a curling rink, essentially. So it's the sound in there was terrible. But that's what everybody says. But it's also, by a lot of accounts, they put too big a PA in there. And it was so echoey. And if they had actually a smaller setup or a different kind of setup or, you know, PA systems 25 years later, maybe a little better, than maybe the shows would be better sounding now. I don't know.
A.O. Chapman, now we move on to the Harlan Ellison interview.
Oh, Harlan Ellison.
We're going to play an interview now from May 15th, 1992.
Holy cow.
That you and I did. May 15th, 1992. Now, I didn't want to replay it, even though I love doing repeats of the Nardwater Human Serviette radio show. Well, bear witness, too. But why am I replaying this, A.O.? Harlan Ellison interview?
It may be 1992, but this is fresh as today's headlines. Why?
Yeah, why?
Because a guy recently on your website.
Who is Harlan Ellison?
Harlan Ellison is a science fiction writer who.
Still alive.
Still alive, who some of you may know certainly from his science fiction writings. He did a car commercial at the time, which we speak of in the interview and is referenced. And also, Nardwar references the fact that he had written a Star Trek episode with. And this is the one with Joan Collins.
When Spock wears a toque.
Where Spock wears a toque. The most great moment of Spock Canadiana that you can ever see. So we were doing an interview. Ellison was coming to town and doing a spoken word engagement, as I recall. And this is 1992. But recently, a guy went on, I believe, your website, Nardwar, and
Nardwar.com.
Nardwar.com, sorry. and brought this up again and said that Harlan was still very upset with us. And I went, and you let me know about this.
Now, let's just back up a second.
Yeah.
A guy went on and complained to us about an interview that was done 14 years ago.
Yeah.
A bit of setup, though, for the interview. This was something you had arranged, and I just happened to be at the station, and you asked me to sit in on the interview. I said, sure, I'll sit in on the interview.
Yeah.
I really had no idea what was going on.
You didn't know anything about Harlan Ellison, and to tell you the truth, I didn't either. I just thought, and Ellison is a guy that has very little, he is constantly surrounded by a coterie of fans and yes men, that people who all know every line of his work. And we were, you know, two people that didn't really know that much about him, but wanted to still conduct an engaging, interesting interview.
We did respect him, and he was very knowledgeable. In the interview, we asked him about Mordecai Richards. You asked him about if he knows your next-door neighbor, and he maybe even tries to understand who your next-door neighbor was. That was George Bowring.
George Bowring at the
George
time.
George Bowring, yes. That was your next-door neighbor at the time.
Who ended up being Canada's Poet Laureate.
Your next-door neighbor.
Yeah.
You are A.O. Chapman. So we did respect his history.
Yeah.
We thought it was really amazing. But during the course of, I shouldn't say the word but during the course, well, I don't know.
We were asking him.
Throwing out anything.
We were asking him what sort of art he liked. Well, and maybe we're getting to a point now we should just play it.
I think we should explain.
Just to explain and explain our side of it, because I don't know if we'll have a chance to comment.
No, we won't.
Is that we were asking him what kind of art that he liked, and you said, do you like Rick Griffin, the Grateful Dead artist?
Grateful Dead artist, because I was thinking Grateful Dead.
Ellison did not know that Griffin had recently died in a car accident.
And we didn't notice. It was all over CNN everywhere.
It was all over CNN, and we were...
Well, we knew this. He didn't know this.
Essentially, we named names, and we broke the story to Ellison.
Which is horrible.
No one wants to be told that. But Ellison was, of course, shocked by this, and then ended up... He wanted to take a pause. That was fine by us. And then we were hoping to pick up the rest of the interview, which we did. But he was really not in a mood to be as engaging as he was before. Now, with all that said, I don't think there was obviously some bad timing in breaking the news to him that a friend of his had passed away, but for him to blame us To that extent, to say that we were out to get him is hogwash.
He did at his presentation. He was slagging us, saying that we were out to get him.
But he also was slagging us by the nature, I believe, of the interview. And
that we were teasing him about his dead friend.
And he was not used to doing a Nardwar-style interview where... You know, very few people are. You'll be the first person to confirm this.
I don't understand what's going on myself, but yeah. I do know during that particular interview, when we were mentioning Rick Griffin, he said phone back in 15 minutes, and we did.
He told us to phone back.
You said, okay, is this interview over? He's like, give me 15 minutes.
Yeah.
We didn't beg for an extra time. We would have left right then, and we phoned him back 15 minutes, and... Actually, before the interview kind of turned weird with that Rick Griffin incident, he was very proactive. You'll hear him say something like, Jerko, are we interviewing or are we chatting? What sort of idiotic interviews is this? He calls me the little guy, and he gets mad with my question about Space 1999. I don't know if I should say too much more than that. Other than 14 years
14
later,
years ago, going back, classic.
14.
Classic cuts.
But why are we playing this? Because so we've kind of explained the background here.
Well,
we're going to play the interview.
It was certainly long,
out of the blue.
Out of the blue. It's certainly long forgotten by us, but until this guy recently posted on your website, nardwar.com, and said... And
Harlan Ellison is angry at you.
Is angry at us. And I ended up writing back. You can look at the thread on your website if you want to catch it more, because it's certainly an interesting bit of invective.
Well, thank you so much for coming into the Nardwar Serviette Radio Show here, A.O. Chapman, the Town Pants.
Playing tomorrow in Bone Island, and Tony Baloney from the Real McKenzies has his new band, Tony Baloney the Rubes, playing at Malone's. He wanted me to pronounce it Malone's. And Slowpoke and a Smoke, featuring Eric Napier and Brad Lambert from the Highballs, who I'm also playing with next Thursday at Malone's, are playing tonight at Elko Cal.
And people should please check out the Vancouver Courier, right?
Yes.
The Vancouver Courier online, I guess, right now.
And check out Smiling Politely at the Gross Mountain tonight.
The Carisdale Arena Story by A.O. Chapman. Well, thanks so much, A.O. Chapman. Here is Harlan Ellison from May 15th, 1992. So
going
thanks
back.
So much, A.O. and do-do-loo-doo.
Do-do.